Welcome to the Lost Dot Podcast and the fifth edition of the Trans-Pyrenees Race, supported by our race partners, Albion and Ride with GPS. Day 6 at TPO number 5, and as the sun rises across these Pyrenean peaks, it looks like Maxime Agut, Cap 80, has built a potentially race-winning lead overnight. But there are still plenty of obstacles ahead, and both Tim De Vitter, Cap 111, and Thomas Bury, Cap 109, continue to chase hard. All of them should complete the challenge of the Ray Parkour at some point today. And if we're lucky, by the end of the day, we may just get to see one of them ride into San Sebastian to take this year's TPR crown. Both control teams are out looking for riders that they can talk to on the raid. David Eyre, race director.
We are standing on the side of the Tourmalet, at just outside Le Monguy. We stayed at Hotel Le Chalet last night in Campan, which was the control point for TCR this year, which was nice. A little bit of our races coming full circle. We're currently bathed in early morning light as we were driving up the Tourmalet earlier. You could see the moon in on full show coming over the mountain tops, and now the sun is starting to kiss the very peaks that we stand underneath as well. We're currently waiting for Thomas Rongen and Lucas Stripmatter, who will be making their way up the mountainside in the next few minutes, before we'll be looking ahead to the front of the race, where it seems that Max, Tim and Thomas Bury have pressed on a little bit overnight. It looks like the early rest for Tim has worked well for him as he's climbed back into second place on the road. Max still with a bit of a lead, so it'll be interesting to see how the race unfolds over the course of the day.
Soon after, the team managed to catch Thomas to see how he's feeling at this very pointiest end of the race. Maxime is ahead, but there is still plenty to ride for.
The night was quite interesting.
Oh yeah, why?
Oh, quite challenging. I was so sleepy. I had a booking in Luz Saint-Sauveur, but I slept 2 hours on the Col d'Aspin and 1 hour on the side of the road and on the Tourmalet. And I decided to still stop at the hotel for 15 minutes. I was a bit in advance from Tim. Mm-hmm. He slept very early. And we're gonna make it very late tonight. So I invested some 50 minutes this morning. Mm-hmm. And I hope it make the change. Yeah. And I'm pushing my best to join Max. But he had a very good, strong day yesterday. So the gap are still big. Yeah. But I'll put everything on the table.
Race reporter Stuart Downey also finds Tim De Vitter, who's once again having to work on his bike.
Just too short to properly get in there, so I can't tighten it the way it should.
Okay, 3 more big climbs to go, and then a lot more, so it's about 300 kilometers an hour, I guess. So I was more in Spain, when we were passing this kind of drinking places for cattle, with this little tap going in it. I was really at some moment just thinking, I'm just going to sit in it. But yeah, I didn't do that, obviously. So maybe I'll do that when I'm in San Sebastian. I'm just going to sit somewhere in the water.
Further back, Control Team 2 have made their way to one of the gravel sections on this year's Ray Parkour. Hannah Lobelestier, race reporter.
We're starting our morning up at Col de l'Anat, which is an off-road climb just above Les Cabanes at about 220 kilometres into the Raid Parkour. The sun is just coming up behind the mountains and lighting the mountains ahead of us with this beautiful red light, and we've got the full moon above it in the sky, and we're hoping that Roel Massink is going to arrive around the corner just in time to get this beautiful light. We're surrounded by horses and cows up here, and they're making an absolute cacophony at times. I'm not normally a horse person, but we've had one following us around, being very friendly and sociable, and we've taken quite a liking to it. So maybe we'll have to be bringing him home in the control car.
Hannah speaks to Rail Massink, Cap 100.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. Pretty good. Pretty excited still. It's still holding up everything. Everything still works. Better than expected.
Your body's all feeling good still?
Yeah. The legs are pretty well. So I'm pretty surprised. Happy with that. And yeah, of course, you have some saddle sores. But yeah, what can you do about that? For the rest, it's all been pretty good. And bike is, I had some minor fix.
Nice to see you enjoying it.
Yeah. It's so nice to see all the different spots of the Pyrenees. Yeah. I've never been there this way before. Hey!
We've got some very friendly horses here at the top of...
Okay.
Yeah, they want to eat everything.
They want to eat,
including our
all
shoes.
All the rubber. Okay. Probably the salt, maybe. But.
And they're nibbling on rolls, shifters and tyres.
Yeah, but it's beautiful, and all the different terrains, all the different styles of gravel. This is pretty gnarly, pretty chunky gravel, but yeah, all good.
It feels like there have been a lot of tears on this year's Trans-Pyrenees race. The landscapes, the scenery, the immense physical and mental challenge. It's a lot. Perhaps the most common cause of occasional weeping, though, joy. Alvin Escajeda, cap number 3.
Yeah, I forgot to tell you guys yesterday. I, for the second time, like a lost art race has made me like spontaneously cry out of happiness. So it's a pretty crazy moment yesterday. It happened at TCR last year and this year too. So
What was the moment that triggered it?
Just happy to be here, you know? So much cruel shit happening in the world, and we just get to play bikes right now is it's really nice. So yeah.
Where were you on TCR when it happened?
I was climbing the Dormitor on like a glorious day in Montenegro. I think it's part of it was a parkour from a couple TCRs ago, but it was just so spectacular. And then yeah, starting the raid, I had some food and just felt super good, and it was sunny and great. So I'm glad I stopped yesterday. So I haven't seen a single person. That either means I'm doing something really right or really wrong, but it doesn't matter. I'm just gonna, it's a lot.
Will Ward, cap 121, is another rider brought to tears by TPR.
Yesterday was a slow day. Today is, still a slow day, but just mentally better.
More positive
better headspace, yeah. A bit emotional yesterday. I think I listened to the pod this morning and it sounded like quite a few people were. I don't know if it was just sort of like, you know, when you sort of hit the coast and it's kind of like, oh wow, the coast, like that's totally amazing. And then you turn around and you're like, oh wow, yeah, there really is quite a long way to go still.
I think it was the day before when everyone's emotions were coming out. We had like 3 or 4 people crying at CP4 and
yeah, I had a little cry yesterday just like riding along, but you know, that's fine.
What brought those tears on?
You're probably gonna have a little cry now. Just like thinking about my family and stuff. My missing my wife and my daughter. My daughter, she like learned to ride a bike like 2 days ago whilst I was here. Like she was kind of inspired by me, I suppose, and got out and like started pedaling on her own. So just like little things like that, you know, like not that I do this to inspire her, but like it's super sweet that she wanted to go and do that, you know. So
lunchtime, and control team 2 find Christian Romero, cap 25.
Yeah, my wheel makes funny noises since 1000k and it's pretty annoying.
What kind of noises? Do you know what's wrong with it?
The spokes into the free hub, and yeah, it sounds pretty bad. But you get used to it.
Is there anything that needs doing? Are you going to try and find a bike shop?
No. Keep on going and singing and turning it off in my head.
Just keep singing over the noise of the wheel. Okay,
yeah.
That's a good solution. Yeah. Any particular music or songs that you're enjoying?
Pooh. I'm too empty in my brain to answer it. But there are dark moments, and then I really start to shout in a bad way.
Andrew Brunton, cap number 4, is riding steady after a rough night in his bivvy, which was on some cardboard under a bin shelter.
Today was a good day. Last night was a bad night, but then it turned good, actually. So I found a bin shelter on the descent, and the best thing was, is I was envisaging there was going to be cardboard for my carry mat, because I didn't have a mat. Not only did I get a body length sheet of cardboard, I got 2 sheets that smelt freshly washed. So I got into my sleeping bag, I had these two sheets, and it was perfect. The only really shit thing was when I woke up and realised that there was been some mice eating my tuck crackers. But that made up for the dogs that was I came across last night on the descent as well. So that was it was 2 sheepdogs loose on the road, and Rasmus was just in front of me, and he was quite scared. I think he was pretty nervous, so he was like, but he didn't know what country he was in, right? So he was trying to tell the dogs to be calm, but he was speaking Spanish to them, and I was like, mate, we're in France. So he kept going, tranquilo, tranquilo. I was like, well, anyway, in the end we just sprinted past him. But yeah, it was a good night last night.
As the team are talking to Andrew, they're joined by Valentin Rowe, cap 120. It seems Andrew's bin shelter was actually his second choice accommodation for the night.
Did you stop at a public toilet last night? You forced me to climb the fucking call because there was that public toilet.
I slept in a public toilet a bit before the Col de Payer, and I arrived there. I said, okay, maybe I will find some place to bivvy, and if I don't, I will go up the col. If not, I sleep. And I found this toilet place, and it was open, and it was big, warm, clean, so perfect. I put my mattress and bivvied, and I locked the door just to be sure that nobody can enter. And I think Andrew arrived, I don't know when, an hour later probably, and I heard somebody trying to open the door. Said, oh yes, I've got it. So he did climb the payer afterwards.
So you didn't invite him in?
No.
Was that because you wanted to keep the place for yourself, or because you wanted to...
No, actually, I wanted to be just sure that no other people, not a rider, but people from the area open and just put me out. No, I think it was too small for 2 people anyway.
Helene Fromenty, cap 52, has been the fastest woman in the race for the last few days, having put in a formidable and measured performance so far. She just needs to keep it all together on the Ray Parkour. Her favourite tunes and a good hotel stop are doing the trick.
We're just on the climb out of Les Cabanes, where riders are approaching an off-road section before Tarascon sur Ariège. We've got Helene Fromenty riding towards me with her music playing.
Hello.
Hey, what are you listening to?
I'm listening to Falls.
Falls? Yeah. They're from my hometown.
Yeah, oh really? Oh, that's so cool. I love them.
How was your night? We saw that you stopped to sleep at about 9 a.m. this morning.
Yeah.
Why was that?
Well, it's a bit funny, like yesterday I saw on Instagram Thomas Bury, who's a French guy in France. He posted a story about a gîte where he stayed with really nice food and everything. And I was like, oh, I want to know where it is. So I check it up on Follow My Challenge, and I found the place. And so the girl was so nice and booked me a room for the night. And I was like, okay, maybe I can manage to do it around 2 or 3. But it was so long, this climb. So in the end, I arrived at 8 in the morning. So I just did the plan, but a bit later. Like, slept for a few hours, had good food, good rest. And yeah, now I'm running again. So, but the night was... really, really long. The passes were quite hard. I stopped once for like 5 minute nap. It was really a game changer. Like, it's just 5 minutes, but it kicks you up. And it was endless to this city where I slept. So I'm glad I made it. Yeah. Still don't know how, but I did it.
Hannah speaks to Helgen Meyer, Cap 53, who's waited until now to share a close encounter from earlier in the race.
Any good stories for us?
The black bear from the first parkour, or...
What, the black bear?
Yeah, I see a black bear. After the first parkour, the downhill, there was, I think it was a deer, and then I know the ass of this animal, and I said, no way, and I started screaming, make noise, and then he recognized me and run away, jump up in the cliff.
This was on parkour one,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, parkour one.
And why are you waiting until now?
I don't know, I forget it, but it's a good story. And also then there came, directly after, this was a guy standing on the side of the road and cheering. It was also cool.
There was a guy standing on the side of the road.
Yeah, and cheering, and yeah.
Cheering for you.
Yeah, and go on. Also a car this morning coming down. Everybody go out of the window, make, yeah, 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 yeah. So it's good. Yeah,
where was that this morning? In France.
Yeah, yeah. The call. I don't know. So many calls now.
Like most of our riders, Jonas Weisbach, Cap 65, has been marveling at the turning seasons in the Pyrenees.
It's been very nice, like a beautiful day today. Really enjoying it. Like the fall colors coming into bloom. I have like a red kind of glasses, so it looks even fancier, I think, how I see it.
You're the second person to say that today.
Oh, really?
We saw Alvin We saw Alvin this morning with his purple glasses on, uh-huh. And he said, yeah, it feels like I'm on drugs.
Yeah.
Everything looks so good.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, like on the like first big climb of today, there were these like red brushes, and like through the red glasses, it's like the mountains are burning. It was, yeah, beautiful.
Have you noticed it change throughout the week as well?
In terms of like scenery or?
Well, I guess, but also the colors changing. We're at that turning of the season.
For sure, a little bit, yeah, definitely. So. Everything is getting more beautiful, so it's almost done now, I feel. I would like to go on for a week, maybe. Then the colors would be even better, I think.
You could do another lap.
Well, if you talk to my employee about that, I would do it.
Most riders combine a bit of bivvying with brief but restorative hotel stops. But Samuel Weidman, Cap 104, prefers the flexibility of knowing that he always has tonight's bed on the back of his bike.
Why do you normally prefer to bivvy over getting a hotel?
It's more, I don't really have to plan, so I'm like more flexible. That's what I was looking for. And I also like the idea more of like being outside the whole time and not being as dependent on all the services that you can get. Although I am buying food and water.
And I guess also that decision-making when you're in a race, when you're looking for hotels, you're spending time trying to make the decisions, trying to calculate how long it'll take to get to the hotel. Mm. It can be quite quite tiring having to do all of that.
Yeah, that's also a thing. I'm lazy and cheap, so I don't want to do any detours. And I don't want to pay like 120 euros for a hotel room that I stay in for like 4 hours.
For many people, ultra races are a chance to leave real life behind for a week or two. But that only goes so far. Sometimes real life comes to you. Hannah speaks to Henning Sudo, Cap 54, who's busy doing his laundry.
Where's your orange t-shirt gone, Henning?
It's drying over there.
Did you just wash it now?
No, wash it, no. The sleeping bag and the clothes got a bit wet this night because I slept outside.
Yeah.
And now I have a moment to dry it a bit. And the orange t-shirt is for the off-road parkours. So I think the next one will be, next climb, will be orange t-shirt time.
It's a warm afternoon when you're in the sun though. How are you finding the conditions?
I'm going as slow as possible because I sweat a lot in the heat and I lose much salt. And when I lose too much salt, I get cramps and get even slower. So I try to, yeah, hold the pace as slow as possible.
And you're still not needing to use your winter kit?
No, but I called my friend yesterday. He also has the Spatz winter overshoes. And he just said, like, yeah, but you could use them as a pillow. I'm like, yeah, perfect idea.
There are plenty of small villages and towns scattered around the Ray Parkour. But there are also long stretches where supplies are more difficult to find. It means riders need to really get stuck in when the opportunity comes up. Joost Klarenbeek, Cap 66.
The end is in sight. There's light at the end of the tunnel, which is quite nice, to be honest. But I was saying just to him as well, like, you go to this shop and there's like these beautiful products there. And maybe you want to describe what I walked out with, you know?
Yeah, I can see in front of me two Coca-Colas. You've got one bottle, one can. A big old monster can.
There was no mango, unfortunately. So
what flavour is this?
I don't know. It's chaotic. It's a flavour chaotic.
Is that a flavour?
I don't know. That's what it says, you know?
And then we've got some Haribo fizzy colas. Some Haribo Strumpfs. A load of Smurfs. Is that what you call Smurfs in French?
It's what it's called in Dutch, I don't know, in French. Yeah. And then we also have this bad boy, we don't forget the third one.
Some Haribo Pokers.
Yeah.
And then some pizza-flavoured crackers. Do you feel like you're on familiar territory now that you're just riding along the Raid Parkour again, ticking off col after col?
Yeah, it's pretty weird. I was describing it to a friend earlier on the phone. That, like, every call has an emotion attached to it. So some call you know is going to be nice because it was nice before, and then you do it again and weirdly enough you feel nice again.
It's evening at TPR number 5 and Control Team 1 are now back in San Sebastian. They're there because Maxime Agut has managed to maintain his lead over the course of the day and is now making his way along the finish parkour. If all goes to plan, he should arrive at the finish line around midnight tonight. Back on the Ray Parkour, Hannah and Control Team 2.
We've just arrived at the top of Col d'Aspin. We've been trying to get here in time for sunset and unfortunately the light's faded now. But luckily we've managed to get here in time to see Adam Whitehead and he's just approaching the summit of the climb now. We've got the sound of cows mooing all around us and a light wind at the top. And I can see him just reaching into his pocket, maybe for some food, maybe for some arm warmers, but hopefully he'll stop and chat to us.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
All right.
Hey. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. It's a pretty nice view, isn't it, up here?
You were absolutely flying up there. We were trying to estimate what time you'd get here and comparing you to some of the other riders, but you're making good progress. You're looking very lively.
Yeah. I had a bit of a sort of dark few hours in the early hours of the morning, and I had like a double espresso.
Quadruple espresso.
Quadruple espresso, yeah. And then that really picked me up. And kind of thereafter I felt all right, actually. Like, I felt kind of like a little bit animal at times, I would say. But, like, I think I stopped pushing quite so hard about 3-4 hours ago or something like that. And sort of my legs came back and things felt a little bit nicer. This morning when I woke up, I went up above Tarascon Sarriage. There's a gravel parkour up there. Yeah. And the full moon was out and the wispy clouds and loads of cows kicking about on top. And you could see quite a lot and that was good. I think the, like, when it's really beautiful, that's quite sustaining. Like, I don't think I would have got round otherwise. But just seeing the really cool sort of the really cool views and scenery and autumn trees and stuff, that's been amazing.
At 9 minutes past midnight, just creeping into day 7, Maxime Agut, Cap 80, rolls into San Sebastian to complete a phenomenal, relentless, victorious ride. He's the deserved winner of this fifth and unique gravel edition of the Trans-Pyrenees race. After crossing the finish line and getting his brevet card stamped to make it official, Maxime speaks to race reporter Stuart Downey.
The first day I would like to go sleep privation, mm-hmm. and after the second day I was like totally smashed. So I say, because I'm quite new in the, I would say, long distance, mm-hmm. so I decided to sleep the next days, mm-hmm. and was okay. You lose some times, but to be honest, in the night you are unproductive. You don't see where you go, you could crash, you could do, and to be honest, you sleep, you recover well,
yeah.
and then after you could like push
hard, yeah.
hard all the day. I'm quite happy also to be the first Pyrenean to win the Trans-Pyrenees.
Join us in our next episode to see if Thomas Bury and Tim De Vita are able to hold their nerve and complete the podium positions at TPR number 5. We'll also be looking to see if there is any change in the women's field, or if Helene Fromentie can sustain the commanding lead that she's built. And of course, there are dozens more riders out on the raid parcours, all still writing their own TPR stories, but with the final chapters in sight. You can read Stuart's daily race reports from the road on the Lost Dot website and get regular updates across all our social media channels. Thanks to our race partners, Albion and Ride with GPS.